You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Recently, the New York Times ran a story called When Syria Came to Fresno, Refugees Test Limits of Outstretched Hand. While that California city was ready for refugees, another town close by was not, Turlock, California. Large numbers of Syrian refugees moved there to make the most of cheap rents. But Turlock wasn't prepared. So it got us here at Marketplace Weekend thinking about the cost of resettlement and how refugees go about rebuilding a financial life. To help us with the first question, we have Stephen Camerata. He's the director of research at the Center for Immigration Studies. I started by asking him to give us some of the numbers on refugees in the U.S.
So the total refugee population in the United States is probably somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million. That, in other words, that's the people we've let in officially as refugees over the last few decades, and they're still here. Now, recently, the refugee numbers fluctuate somewhere around, say, 75,000 a year, though they've been a little bit more in the latter years of the Obama administration after having dropped in the earlier years. But the big sending countries right now are Bhutan, Burma, Iraq, Somalia. These are the countries that are sending the most people, or we're admitting the most people from there, maybe the better way to say it.
Yeah. Obviously, we're in this moment where the president's travel ban and refugee policy are, you know, encountering a lot of legal challenges. But that aside, what goes into figuring out where they go?
In terms of where they go, typically it's the refugee resettlement agencies, and there are a whole bunch of them, often associated with various Christian denominations, but it's across the board. There are secular organizations as well. And they're the ones who often ask and try to resettle people in certain communities. Although a lot of refugees end up in cities and so forth, there is an attempt to sort of spread them out across the United States. And often this means that they settle in smaller towns and cities that may have more difficulty absorbing folks with all these special needs. But the reason partly that's done is housing costs are typically so much less and general cost of living is less. So the idea is, well, we can put folks in and it won't be quite so costly, but then also it creates a lot of challenges sometimes for those communities.
Well, so let's dig into those cost questions. I mean, I was looking at your research, and there's a number that says it's about $65,000 per person from Syria. What's behind that?
Right. So a lot of that is welfare costs. It's always important to remember that immigrants, when they arrive, have immediate access to all welfare programs. But it also involves the cost that the State Department incurs when it's vetting people, transporting people, and also helping them with resettlement. And then there's the Office of Refugee Resettlement in the United States, which does things like put people in apartments, buys them clothes when they arrive, furniture. Remember, refugees often arrive with very little. So refugees need a lot of assistance typically when they arrive. So there's all these immediate costs that both the State Department and the Office of Refugee Resettlement incur. You know, that can be very substantial every year. But then in addition to that, there are all these programs that folks are allowed to use. The Office of Refugee Resettlement does try to assist local communities, but they do give them grants, and they do give local nonprofits grants, but it's usually not that much.
What kind of an impact can refugee resettlement have on a local economy?
Right. Well, on the one hand, you're adding more people. That may mean more consumers and maybe potentially more workers. But because of all the special needs of refugees, often children in school who are several years behind, even in their own country, children who've experienced trauma, individuals who've experienced, adults who've experienced trauma, they often have, they bear significant psychological scars. And that can present challenges to the mental health system. So in areas like education and mental health, there can be big issues. And this can be a real struggle for local communities that are not so big, where a significant number of refugees do get settled to deal with these challenges. Now, it is true that refugees, because they're eligible for all welfare programs, can get a lot of assistance from the federal government. But it's important to remember that for the Office of Refugee Resettlement, or what the State Department does for folks when they arrive, is pretty short term. So it falls to the local community or the state or the county to start providing services pretty quick. And so, again, that can really strain budgets. But it's always important to remember refugee resettlement is not supposed to be about a benefit to the United States, but rather it's supposed to be about a humanitarian policy that we're trying to rescue people who are more or less fleeing for their lives.
Stephen Camerata, Director of Research at the Center for Immigration Studies, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
For the second part of our story, we turn to a couple in Los Angeles. A lot of life in the U.S. revolves around money and credit. So what happens when you have to leave your home and leave everything you know to rebuild your economic life?
My name is Jay Abdul. I am a Syrian actor. I had to flee my country in 2011.
My name is Fadia Fashe. I am a visual artist, activist for women's rights. I came before my husband. I came as a student to the U.S. and I was planning to study, finish, and go back home. Then when the situation in Syria went from bad to worse, I called my husband and asked him to come and visit me.
When I left Syria, I didn't think for a minute it will be forever. I didn't want to leave my country because I had a wonderful career, but I wasn't safe.
We decided there is no home anymore, and this is our country, and we are not going back.
Suddenly, you are no one. You have to seek everything to start from scratch. I'm asking for help. I'm asking for financial help because I couldn't move any of my assets out of Syria because nobody could. All my savings were confiscated in Syria because I took stand by the people.
We lost our savings, our retirement plan, our houses, everything we built back home. Whenever you are asylee in the U.S., you don't have any help or support because you are not approved yet. After approval, you get help for just 8 months. I was looking at my husband, telling him we could be homeless and no one will come to us to ask us, do you need anything or any help? We needed someone just to tell us how to turn the heater on, to tell us, like, oh, you need a credit history in order to get an apartment.
We kept applying for apartments, sending emails, and we were always rejected, and we didn't know why. We didn't know about the credit. We didn't know that they don't give apartments to jobless people. We started thinking it was personal just because we were Syrians. The system in Syria is totally different. We don't have the credit. We don't use credit cards. We deal only in cash. If you go to rent an apartment, you don't need any credit.
Actually, the only way we were able to get this apartment by paying 6 months in advance, but that was all our money. I think the resettlement program for the refugees are very limited. This assistant is just will never really cover your expenses for rent.
I think I applied for more than 300 jobs and I didn't get an interview. I saw an ad saying that we're looking for drivers to deliver flowers and they hired me. I was delivering flowers like 2 or 3 days a week, making $300 a month, which is nothing.
We hardly have money to eat. We ate bones for many, many weeks because we don't have enough money.
After all, I found Uber and Lyft, and I started driving for those companies. I made more money. Now that we have friends, we feel family. Yes, we don't have our family here, but we have a foster family.
I know many refugees, they would not have been survived without the help of other American people.
I'm so grateful and happy that my wife has a decent job, so we are financially safe, we are secured, we don't fear tomorrow, you know. We can pay our apartment, we can afford to lease a car and to have food on the table.
It's not easy to suddenly become a refugee. Ask anyone. No one would think in his life that he will be a refugee one day, including myself.
That was Fadia Afashe and Jay Abdo sharing their experience of rebuilding an economic life as refugees in the United States. That story was produced by Alyssa Dudley.